we have the good fortune of the opportunity to discuss and learn the fifth chapter of the Gita over 3 days. Today, which will be the introduction, and tomorrow and day after evening. Please do come, invite your friends, and make an effort to get the younger generation here. By younger, I don't mean kids. I mean anyone over the age of 15 or 16. This is because, contrary to general perception, the Bhagavad Gita is easy to understand, easy to implement. It's a wonderful thing that changes our world view. It expands our minds and enables us, most importantly, to tap into our potential and achieve excellence. The Bhagavad Gita is not a preparation for death. It is a preparation for life. It's a technique of life which, when learned, enables us to achieve success effortlessly, happiness and growth to our potential. The fifth chapter is entitled Renunciation in Action. We often misbelieve that renunciation is about giving up your wealth, giving up your jobs or businesses, giving up your families, and giving up all that is valuable to you, and going away to the Himalayas or I don't know where. That's not true. And over these 3 days, you'll get it straight from the horse's mouth, straight from Krishna. What is renunciation? Ramakrishna Paramahamsa said, when a fisherman goes out to fish, there are 4 kinds of fish that deal with the fisherman's net. The first is alert to see the net coming in and quickly gets out of the way, never gets caught. The second is a little slow, gets caught but manages to escape. The third, too late, gets caught, struggles to escape but dies. And the last, bites the net, secure in the belief that it's safe, not realizing that death is a few seconds away. Sri Ramakrishna says that similarly there are 4 kinds of human beings, which in fact the fifth chapter talks about. There is the jnani, who lives in the world, who is part of the world, who transacts with the world and enjoys the world fully, but is never caught. Never caught in the net of Maya. Never caught in suffering. Never caught in trauma and turmoil. He or she lives a life of bliss in the world. Then comes the sannyasi. The sannyasi is like the fish who gets caught but manages to escape. So initially he or she is involved in the world and suffers a little bit, but learns from not only his own experiences but the experiences of others, like Buddha, and manages to liberate himself, mukta. The third is the yogi. The yogi is one who is caught, perhaps never manages to escape, but has that vision of freedom, has moksha as the goal, and struggles to break free from the bondage of the world. See, the problem is not with the world. The problem is with our wrong association with the world. If you have the right relationship with the world, you enjoy it, you are in it, you have every part of the world, yet you're free and happy. But if you have the wrong relationship, if you get attached to everything, if you're possessive about everything, people and things, then you live a life of misery. But a yogi is one who at least has that vision of the transcendental and works towards it. The bhogi is the one who likes the fish who bites the net and stays put. He's not even aware of a better state of being. He's not aware that he's suffering. You see, one of the worst things in life is to get acclimatized to suffering. Is to get desensitized to suffering. Most of us are suffering, but we don't realize we're suffering because we don't understand a state where we could be free from suffering. So, renunciation. The fifth chapter talks of renunciation and action. The two are not mutually exclusive. It's not as if when you act, you cannot be renounced, and when you renounce, you have to give up action. It is not renunciation of action that the Gita speaks of. It is acting in a spirit of renunciation. So let's see what renunciation is. It is one of the most misunderstood concepts of Vedanta and the Bhagavad Gita. And therefore, people give up the Bhagavad Gita because they have a wrong concept. So many people come to me and say, I'm interested in the Bhagavad Gita, but I don't want to give up my wife. I said, who in the world wants you to give up your wife? Nobody wants you to give up your money. No one wants you to give up your families. Nobody wants it. All that we are saying is, enjoy what you have. Fully, 100%. We don't even enjoy what we have. So yes, we have happiness, but the happiness that we experience is unnecessarily interrupted by spasms of sorrow. And that sorrow is what we have to renounce. We don't have to renounce happiness. We have to renounce sorrow, because Swami Ramatirtha, one of the greatest apostles of Vedanta, who lectured here in America more than 100 years ago, he spoke of it and he said, your primary duty in life, your only duty in life is just to be happy, cheerful, full of beans and mischief, vibrant, dynamic, effective. Are we that? Do we wake up feeling completely blissful? Or do we wake up weighed down with worries and anxieties? And that worry and anxiety you need to drop. So, renunciation is not giving up. It is moving up. When a child grows into a teenager and experiences far more thrilling things, when the child is exposed to greater avenues of happiness, then the desire for the toys give up the child. The child doesn't give up toys. The toys give up the child. So very soon, and it's so effortless, it's so seamless, the transition, that you never experience a void. You just move to more and more exciting things, more fulfilling things, happier things in life, until you grow into an adult. As an adult now, you are stuck. What are you stuck with? Physical things. So we are all at the level of the physical. It's all about eating, seeing, smelling, tasting, touching. When the Gita says, move up, the Gita is not asking us to give up physical things. It's only saying, why are you blocking higher enjoyment? When you move to the plane of the emotional, when you experience emotional joys, then the physical, because it is of a lower quality, no longer matters. I come from Mumbai, India. And we have a marine drive. I don't know how many of you have been there, along the sea. But in Mumbai, we have only three seasons. The three seasons are hot, hotter, and wet. But in that blazing sun, you see couples sitting there by the seaside. They don't seem to be affected by the heat. If you and I were to go out there on Marine Drive, we'd be sweating and huffing and puffing. Why are they not affected by the heat? The blazing sun doesn't seem to impact on them because they are experiencing a far higher plane of consciousness, enjoyment. Many of us are too old to even remember that, I think. But that's what it is. I often tell people, you know, when your teenage daughter shows disinterest in food, shows disinterest in the happenings of the house, watch out, chances are she's in love. Then you come to the plane of the intellectual. When a person is inspired to get a PhD in a particular subject. I knew a young girl in Mumbai who moved away from the comfort of her home. She came from an affluent family in Mumbai, and you know how it is in India, everything gets done for you. And she came here to a university where she had to do everything herself. She moved away from the safe confines of her family and her loved ones and her circle of friends into a strange world here. So she rose above physical and emotional joys because she had the intellectual ideal to get a PhD, and she has got one, and she's doing very well for herself. The highest is spiritual. Once the lure of the eternal gets to you, everything else in the world fades away. It's not that you can't enjoy it. It's not that a sage or a sannyasi can't enjoy good food or chocolate. It's not that he cannot have wonderful relationships with people. Of course he has. And it is not that he cannot enjoy intellectual delights. But it's just that he has access to a world that you and I have blocked out. The world of infinite bliss. And that, once you have it, once you have the vision of that, then you're a different person. Like Dhruva, the young boy, the son of a king, a prince, when he was sitting, the little child was sitting on the father's lap, his stepmother came and pushed him away and put her son on the king's lap because she wanted her son to be king after him. This little child didn't understand kingship or anything. He only understood that he had been pushed off the father's lap. So he went crying to his mother. The mother, in her wisdom, did not say anything negative about the stepmother. She did not even refer to the stepmother. She only said, "This is the world, my son. In the world consists of pairs of opposites. Sometimes you get what you want. Other times, you don't get what you want. And if you want to live in the world, you have to be able to deal with both." So he said, "But I don't want this. I don't want the pairs of opposites. I want only happiness. How do I get it?" And she said, "The only way of getting only happiness is when you get to God." His next question was, "Where is God?" She said, "Inside you, my son." That's all the teaching that he required. The next thing you know, he's sitting in deep meditation upon God. And Lord Vishnu was so happy with his tapasya, with his urge to get to God. You know, it's like the closest that we can describe it to is the pangs of separation that a lover feels. And the urge and the strong, intense desire to get back to the lover. Much more intense than that is the desire for God, which we don't have, not even in a weak way. So, Vishnu was so pleased with this little boy and said, "Open your eyes, Dhruva, here I am, you wanted God." He didn't budge. He said, "My mother told me God is inside. If you are really God, come inside. We'll meet here." And that was the last test that Dhruva was put to. And he met with God. He reached the state of God realization. Nachiketas, the other boy who went to Lord Yama for Brahma Vidya, for God, was made to wait 3 days because Lord Yama was away. And when Yama came back, he offered him 3 boons to make up for the 3 days that he was kept waiting. His first boon was obligation to the family. He said, my father was very disturbed when I came here. Of course, any father would be disturbed if the son went to Lord Yama. Appease his agitation. Tathastu, said Yama. So be it. Second, teach me the art of serving the world, of doing good to the world. And he did it so brilliantly that he got triple A's. And third, teach me Brahma Vidya. That's when Lord Yama hesitated. He wanted to make sure that Nachiketas really wanted that. So he said, why do you want Brahma Vidya? Here, I give you all the wealth in the heaven and earth. He turned disgustedly on the other side. Not interested. When he turned the other side, apparently there were heavenly damsels dancing there. So Yama thought to himself, wealth doesn't motivate him. Maybe this might. So he tells him, you can have them too. Nachiketa looks at him and says, Tavaiva vahastava nritya gita. You keep your song and dance, Yama, give me Brahma Vidya. This is the lure of the spiritual. How do you get there? We don't have it, right? How do you get there? You get there by giving yourself moments of inspiration. Look at a rising sun. Look at a beautiful flower. Look at a river, a lake, go by the seaside, on a beach. The other day I was at LA. And wonder, who created this beautiful universe? Who created the sun, the solar system, the Milky Way galaxy, the entire universe consisting of trillions and trillions of stars, millions and millions of light years away from us? What a humongous universe. Who could have created it? You will never get answers to that. But the question itself expands your mind, puts you in a peaceful state. Then you don't worry about, did my husband do the dishes or have I got to do it? A lady in Austin told me, I have a wonderful husband. But I'm constantly fighting with him because he doesn't do the dishes when I want him to. It's not that he doesn't do it, but he doesn't do it when I want him to. So I said, you know, he's a husband, he's not a slave. Let go. I'm not saying keep your house dirty. Let go of the anxiety. Let go of the demands. And when your mind expands, you understand the futility of worldly pursuits. And that's what it's about. Renunciation is not about dispossession. It is all possession. You see, what happens is, when you're possessive about your car, your home, your this, that and the other, then you are excluding yourself from everything else in the world. But when you become dispossessive about your own car, your own wealth, you have an attitude of trusteeship towards your own belongings, then you own the whole world. Like King Janaka. King Janaka was a king, a man of immense wealth, clout, power. But he had an attitude of dispossessiveness towards all his things. And therefore he became all possessive. All possessions belonged to him. Renunciation is not life denying. It is life enabling. It removes all the pinpricks of life. It removes the sorrow that is associated with life. It removes the pangs of life that we experience. Renunciation is not giving up action. It is giving up the obstacles that come in the way of action. The impediments to action. When we act, we are not concentrating on the action. There are so many aspects of action that we will look into in the next 2 days, tomorrow and day after. Fascinating portions of action. But briefly, it is about focusing entirely on the present action, giving of yourself to the present action, performing it dedicatedly, wholeheartedly, excitedly, but detachedly. And what do you detach from? Anxiety for the future. We all have a result in mind. We have expectation that this action should give me a promotion, this action should get me applause, this action should give me a prize maybe, or an increment, bonus. That interferes with the present action. And we have desire pushing us from the past. So when the mind meanders to the dead past and unborn future, you are not focusing on the present action. It is only the present action that can give you success in future. So what you need to do is clip the past, clip the future, and plunge into the present fully, 100%. Success has to be yours. Renunciation is thought, shifting the thought to the higher while you transact with the world. And that is a wonderful combination. If you are able to practice it, you are happy every moment of your life. You enjoy every action. Today, action has become drudgery. You go to work, it's drudgery. You look at the faces of people going to work, at work. I've been to several offices here because I speak to corporates on precisely this inspiration. I don't see anyone excited. And even after the talk, they come to me and say, you know, you're talking, but you haven't been to our organization. You don't know what's happening here. There's so much stress, there's so much pressure, And then because of that, you take home all these worries and then start screaming at your partner, at your spouse, at your children. They have not contributed to it. They haven't done anything. The poor child just drops that to a paper glass. And the mother screams and shouts at him. And then I say, what has he done that he should deserve this? And she says, it's not that. I had problems in the office. That is what you have to renounce. Renunciation is waste management. Putting it simply, when you eat an orange, you peel the skin and eat the orange, right? What would you say to a person who eats the orange whole with the skin? The person will experience the sweetness of the orange, but that will be intercepted periodically by bitterness. And that is what is happening to us. Because we haven't renounced the bitter things of life. Yes, we enjoy life. Yes, there are the thrills. Yes, there are the days of wine and roses. But these days of wine and roses soon become days of wine and neurosis. Why? Because we don't have the spirit of renunciation, which is such a wonderful thing. This is our heritage. This is what we are worth. And this is what we need to bring with us and contribute to the country of our adoption. How can we do that when we don't even know it? There are more Americans who are interested in the Bhagavad Gita and study it than Indians. There is a David Frawley who has studied Vedanta, and he is an Indophile. He loves India so much that he has actually changed his name to Vamadeva Shastri. He has an ashram here in the United States. And he says the greatest enemy of the Indian culture are the educated Indians who reject Vedanta. Now, you know, when you reject something, you must know what it is. Without knowing it, how can you reject it? That's what you tell a child. If you offer something that the child has never eaten before and the child says, no, I don't want it, what do you say? At least taste it. After tasting, you can say, I don't want it. without tasting it, maybe you'll like it, maybe it's valuable to you. You're just saying no for the sake of it. And that's what we're doing. Because we have preconceived notions. And this is not just now, this is for the last 1,000 years. And that is why we have been ruled by foreigners. When Indians were living the principles of Vedanta, when we were enriched within with Vedantic ideals, we went through the golden eras where we were externally prosperous. There are descriptions that streets were lined with gold. When we lost that internal enrichment, we lost our external wealth. People came and stole it from us, ruled us for more than... The British ruled for 200 years. Before that, so many people have ruled. And today, our state, we still haven't learned that. You see, this is one end of the story. The other end of the story is ethical bankruptcy precedes financial bankruptcy. So when your fortunes go down, it is not because your management of money is wrong. It is because internally you have lost it. You have lost the internal enrichment. Once you are strong, you have merit within, the wealth of the world will come to you whether you want it or not. And that's the state we need to get to. Here in the United States, wherever I go, people are kind to me. They put me up in their own homes. And people invite me to lunch and dinner. So I've seen a lot of homes. But the interesting thing is, often you find the garage full of junk. And there is so much junk in the garage that both the cars, each of which is worth at least $70,000, has to be parked outside. The value of all the junk put together is perhaps $30. What is the value of the car? So, this is an indication of how we're living life. What we are doing, we have become junk collectors. Someone sent me a film on WhatsApp, short film, and it's so true. It's about a guy, taxi driver, cab driver, who picks up a passenger, and as he's driving him to his destination, another car comes and cuts into him and almost bangs into him. And then he stops, gets out of the car, and starts screaming at the cab driver. Yelling and screaming for quite a while, and then he gets back in and goes. The cab driver doesn't say a word. He doesn't even get out of the car. He just puts up his hand and smiles at him. So the passenger then asks him, how do you manage to keep your cool when this guy was so provocative? First of all, it was his fault. He almost had an accident. And then he has the gall to get out and scream at you. So the cabbie smiles and says, you know what? All of us are carrying, we are garbage collectors. So we're like a truckload of garbage. And when the garbage piles up, you need to offload it. So obviously this guy had a lot of garbage and he needed to offload it. He decided to offload it on me. If I give it back to him, then I'm offloading my garbage. But I don't have any garbage. So, I just smile. What a wonderful attitude to have. You know, this is it. All of us have baggage from the past. We have prejudices. We hold grudges against people. We say, oh, my uncle 50 years back did this to him and I still don't talk to my uncle. You know, things like this. And all of this put together is the garbage that we are carrying. And when it piles up, you need to offload it. And therefore you get angry with a fellow passenger. You know, there's all kinds of rage. Road rage, air rage, this rage, that rage. Domestic rage. And the Gita speaks of samatvam yoga uchyate. Equanimity of mind is yoga. The Gita speaks of the state where you are santushta satatam. Tushta, content. Santushta, supremely content. Satatam, always. Always supremely content. Where are we? Always supremely discontent. Always we're bubbling. There's something going wrong with us. We're ill at ease, we're discontent. And all this put together causes the waste. So renunciation is managing the waste first and effective, efficient disposal of the waste so that you enjoy life. So when you live a life of renunciation, your life changes from mediocrity to excellence, from drudgery to revelry, from indignation to inspiration, and from misery to magic. You experience the magic of life. Act in a spirit of renunciation. Don't give up action. You can never give up action. You must not. Then you become rejuvenated, energized. Versus now, you don't have the energy. Every day you go home saying, I'm tired. You should be like a sports person. When a person goes out and plays a game of tennis, he comes home mentally rejuvenated. Physically, tired maybe, but still energized. Excited, exhilarated. Action gives you satisfaction. You become successful, you're happy. And your desires reduce. When desires reduce, you grow into a towering personality. So, this is the overview of the fifth chapter. The first seven verses talk about yogi, sannyasi, jnani. You remember the four kinds of fish that we looked at. Their approach to action, verses 8 to 12. How do they act? Then he defines a jnani. Who is a jnani? How do you know who a jnani is? Jnani means a man of realization. Verses 16 to 21. Pathway to enlightenment. How do you get there? How do you become a jnani? You may be a bhogi, a worldly person, materialistic person. How do you transition from a bhogi to a yogi, sannyasi, and get to the highest level? Then he speaks of prerequisites to meditation, 22 to 26, because he is now preparing for the next chapter, sixth chapter, which deals with dhyana yoga meditation. And he introduces meditation in the last three verses. So now we just give you a jhalak of the verses of the fifth chapter, and then tomorrow and day after we will continue with it.
Arjuna vacha sanyasam karmanam krishna punaryogam cha shamsasi yachreyaetayorekam tanme bruhi sunishchitam.
So Arjuna, O Krishna, you advocate renunciation of action as well as the path of action. Which of these two is better? Tell me decisively. So in Vedanta, in the spiritual path, there are two clear and distinct paths. The path of action and the path of knowledge, or the path of renunciation. So which one do you do? His question arises because he has a problem. The problem is he wants to fight a battle and he doesn't want to. He has to fight a battle and he doesn't want to. He wants to go away and retire to the Himalayas. That is his dilemma. And Krishna answers.
Shri Bhagavan uvacha sanyasa karma yogascha nishreyasa karabhubhau tayostu karma sanyasat karma yogo vishishyate.
Shri Bhagavan uvacha, Krishna answers, renunciation and the path of action both lead to the highest bliss. But between the two, the path of action surpasses renunciation of action. Why is he saying that? Because he's talking to Arjuna. Now, we need to understand what it is. A novice, a person who is just starting on the path of, on the spiritual path, needs to act. Why does he need to act? Because he's full of desires. You know, you can't wish away desires. You can't just say one fine day I'm going to give up desires. You can't give up desires. You need to deal with them. So, the path of action is such that you fix, you have all kinds of desires, you fix a higher ideal, and your mind shifts from working for self-benefit to loka sangraha, working for the benefit of humanity. That's when your lower desires drop because you're not feeding them, and you get established in the higher. Your desires reduce. Once your desires reduce, you are then fit for the next path, which is for the prose, which is the path of renunciation. If you are at the level of action and you decide to follow the path of renunciation, number one, you cannot do it. Number two, it's dangerous for you. You don't progress. Now, why are we saying that? There are three reactions that take place, three R's that take place, three transactions in us. One, we receive stimuli from the world. Just now you're seeing and hearing. Before this you heard the wonderful bhajan sung by these two little kids so beautifully. And so on and so forth. You see, hear, smell, taste, touch. These stimuli enter you through your five sense organs. Having entered you, they react at the level of the mind and intellect with your desires. So depending on the desires you have, you respond positively, negatively, or no response. So, a novice who's full of desires, let's say all of us, you go home and you're watching TV, you're watching news maybe, you're watching a game of basketball, you're watching whatever, your favorite movie. That newscast is intercepted by commercials. So when you watch a commercial, let's say for the launch of a new car, if you have a desire for a car, then there's a reaction inside you. What is that reaction? Oh, maybe I should test drive that car. Nice car. And then the response is, you actually go out and test drive it and maybe buy the car. But if you don't have a you have lots of desire. Next desire is maybe, what is that called? Electric pressure cooker. And you don't have it. You say, wow, so many features it has. And off you go buy it. And the third is a music recital, a concert, a movie. And so, you are reacting to almost every stimulus that comes to you and responding to it. So the bulk of your actions becomes reaction. You're constantly reacting, responding, acting. Such a person needs the path of action. You need to refine action. But a person who has less desires, less vasanas, sees the commercial for a car, says, I don't need it. Sees the commercial for a movie, I don't need. Does nothing to you. So you are not reacting to the stimuli and you are not responding. This doesn't mean you are an inactive person. You could be very dynamic, like Lord Krishna was. Very active, very participative in the world. But you decide what action you have to take. You are not just reacting to the world. Do you understand the difference? So, it's like you have two test tubes. In one test tube, there's a chemical. In another test tube, there's nothing. And you pour an acid into it, into both. What happens? When you pour acid into the empty test tube, nothing happens. You pour acid into the test tube that has a chemical, there is an effervescence. That is the man of action. That's the path of action. The empty test tube is path of renunciation.
Niyasa nitya sanyasi yo na dveshti na kaṅkṣat
One who neither hates nor desires should be regarded as a nitya sannyasi, eternal sannyasi. For, O Mahabaho, freed from the pairs of opposites, such a one is easily liberated from bondage. So what is our problem, is our preferences. It is our preferences that bind us. If you are free from preferences. You know, like many people ask me, you travel everywhere, you're going to different places across the world, what about food? And I say, you know, my only condition is that I eat vegetarian food. I don't eat meat. Barring that, if I get good food, I'm happy. If I get bad food, also I'm happy. Because then I eat less and I lose weight. So, I have no preferences. That is the last thing on my mind. So then what happens? You're free. Then you're not looking for where will I get good food. Similarly, when you have no preferences, you are unaffected by the dvandvas, the pairs of opposites. When you don't care whether it's hot or cold, you know, I've traveled already across the US. When I landed in New Jersey, it was cold, nice and cold. When I come here, it's nice and hot. Both ways it's nice. This makes me feel comfortable. It's more like weather back home. No preferences, you're not affected. This doesn't mean you don't enjoy what you like. But it doesn't bind you. Now, desires create bondage. If you have a desire for golf, then 5 hours you're bound. And then what do? You call friends over. Your whole activity is around golf then. And that golf, desire for golf. Golf doesn't bind you. Desire for golf binds you. We are not saying don't play golf. We're simply saying don't get bound. How to overcome likes and dislikes? Act in a spirit of sacrifice for a higher cause. And when you're working for a higher cause, your personal likes and dislikes don't bother you. Like, I am passionate about spreading the knowledge of Vedanta. Everything else is immaterial. It doesn't matter. Tapas, austerity, work hard towards your goal. Anything that interferes with the achievement of your goal, say no to it. This is not torturing yourself. It's just focusing your energies unilaterally. And then dana. Dana is very important. All of us belong to the privileged class. And this has nothing to do with what you have or don't have. Sudama, who had nothing, had a 100% attitude of giving. So even when he was sent to Krishna with the specific purpose of asking for help, he only thought of giving. And see, look at the result. He did not ask. He forgot to ask. He simply had a good time with Krishna and came back. What happened? His hut was converted into a magnificent mansion. And that is a way of telling us, when you give, you gain. We'll discuss this in more detail later. And then you will be easily liberated from bondage. So the take-home points for today. We discussed yogi, sannyasi, jnani. What is renunciation and what is not? How to act in a spirit of renunciation, which we will deal with in more detail in the next 2 days. The paths of action and renunciation, and that desires create bondage. Learn the Gita before living. Thanks to the management of Arya Samaj, who have very kindly given us this wonderful facility to discuss the Bhagavad Gita, we have this opportunity to learn the 5th chapter today, tomorrow and day after. Please do come tomorrow and day after. I'm not saying this because I want an audience. It's not that. In India, I have 1,000 people in the audience. So however many come, they're still less than what I get in India. That's not the thing. It is that there are many people out there who can benefit from the knowledge of the Gita. And you will be doing them a service by just telling them, informing them. So please do that tomorrow and day after, 7 to 8:30. Thank you very much. Incidentally, if you are interested in Vedanta and you want more of it, we have videos on YouTube, but they are short clips just so that you get interested in the subject. We have a website that posts valuable articles. We post 2 verses of the Gita every fortnight and other articles. We have various programs for children, for teenagers, for young adults. We do corporate training programs and several other things. So please pick up a brochure on your way out. And those of you who are interested, we have some books, CDs, and the entire Bhagavad Gita on one pen drive, on one USB drive, which is 125 hours of lectures on MP3. And that's audio. And the video on 7 pen drives, you can help yourself to that. Thank you very much.